Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd, a podcast about the curdy, nerdy, and downright funky world of artisan cheese. This is your host, Greg Blaze. As cheesemongers and cheese lovers, we often root for our favorite cheeses to win awards. There's often something on the label that shows it won gold, medal, or best in show, or some sort of ribbon. And on today's show, we're going to talk all about judging cheese, what cheese judges are looking for, and how cheeses are categorized. I'm excited to welcome both of our guests on the show, David Grotenstein, who is in the studio. How are you, David G?
I'm very well. Thank you very much. Good to be here.
And Carlos Yescas on the line, who just completed judging for the World Cheese Awards in London. How are you doing, Carlos?
Good, Greg. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, both of you.
Yeah,
so
thanks.
Before we get started in earnest, Carlos, I wanted to ask you, you are the author of the Raw Milk Cheese Petition that's going around the world right now, and I was wondering if you could just give us a little soundbite on that and what's going on with it.
Sure. Well, this is really the second part of many-step process that we're trying to do to engage with the FDA. And this part, the petition is very specific now on the levels of E. coli monocytogenes that were set up at the beginning of the year and that we're not very happy about. And the Old West Cheese Coalition is here really following the lead of Vermont cheesemakers, specifically the people at Jasper Hill, who got involved with it and started talking to their congressional leaders in Vermont. And they're going to be sending a letter, and that's Peter Walsh, Bernie Sanders, and Patrick Leahy will be sending a letter to the FDA asking them to explain how they came up with the levels for E. coli that are at, in place at the moment. And so we just wanted to show some support to what these congressmen are doing in support of raw milk cheese. So that's what the petition is about. So it's very specific on questions about E. coli, monocytogenes, and as you know, people that are aware of these issues, raw milk is not just one thing is pasteurization, but another thing is microbiological diversity. And so when we're talking about microbiology, you know, we have to start looking at many issues, and so this is one of those issues. And that's, you know, that this is E. coli, which is not necessarily pathogenic, but it could mark for other pathogens in milk, and that's what this number that the FDA is looking at. Is an important issue. What we feel is happening is that by setting a very low standard of this type of E. coli, they're basically getting rid of raw milk cheese because it will be just easier to pasteurize your milk to make cheese to achieve these very, very, very low levels of E. coli. So, yeah, that's the main idea for this petition.
Carlos, it's David. So is there any basis in reality to that low number that they came up with? And is there any reason that's spurring on this move on this part? Any incident or anything in particular? Or is it just an arbitrary move?
It is completely arbitrary. And thank you so much, David, for the question. It's not based in science. This is this is even lower number than the number that is used throughout Europe for cheeses that are made with raw milk. And what we have heard from Professor Catherine Donnelly up in the University of Vermont is that this is really a recommendation that came from a large dairy, and it was just adopted without any real consideration during the public comment process that the FDA had. And so there's no scientific basis. It really just comes from a suggestion from people that are not advocating for raw milk cheese. Mm-hmm.
Just science in a vacuum there. Good stuff.
Yep.
Well, since before we get into our cheese judging, so what can our listeners do at this point? Is our date to petition the FDA has already passed, right? Or is right now it's right now, basically it's passing right now as we speak, right?
Yeah, and this is going to be a very long process. As I said, it's a many part process. So the FDA is looking at many issues, not only pasteurization, but they're looking at different types of bacteria, different types of maturing processes, and they are doing this in the review of the 60-day rule. So what we are encouraging people to do right now is to go sign this petition. It is on the website of the Cheese Coalition, and that website is alwayscheese.org. You can go sign the petition there. If you write a comment, it's even more powerful than just signing the petition. And we are going to be closing the petition tonight at midnight. And we are going to send all those comments and all those signatures to not only the congressional delegation from Vermont, but also to the many co-sponsors in Congress that are getting on board with this. So we're happy to say that we have co-sponsors from both sides of the aisle, but there's also co-sponsors from everywhere in the United States. So we want to show the FDA that we are paying attention and that consumers are paying attention about their food. And so we would love to get to 5,000 signatures by the end of the day today. We are at 3,000 and some, so we are not that far away. So I encourage people to go
online
and find a petition and sign it.
Do it. Get online, sign that thing up. Thanks so much, Carlos, for that info.
That is.
So I wanted to talk to both of you guys. Maybe I was going to start with you, David. So what's your own experience as a cheese judge in competitions, and you know, what competitions have you helped judge, and how did you get into that role?
Well, how I got into it is a really a good question. I'm trying to remember back. Obviously, I was in retail. I'd been in retail for a number of years, and I was working at Fairway in New York at the time. And I was asked way back when by Gerard Stern to come judge in at Rutgers, and the judging for the American Cheese Society was much smaller at that time, and it was a fascinating experience. I had no idea that this sort of thing even took place, and so it was a great experience, and I continue to judge. I think I judged three times more beyond that.
What years?
I knew you'd ask me that. I'm not quite sure. 2003 is the one that I remember in San Francisco, because that had a funny episode there. So there was there's one other, and then in 2006, John Greeley, who was the chairman of the ACS judging at the time, had been for many years, off and on over a 15-year period, I think, asked me if I would come and be the judging chair for them, and I said no. Of course not.
Why would you do that?
Because I didn't think I had any skill in this department as either leadership in this way or organizational skills or cheese knowledge or whatever it was. It just didn't seem like the job. And John twisted my arm until I accepted, and it was as rewarding a thing as I've done in my career.
Carlos, what about you, man? When did you get into be judging? You just got back from judging the World Cheese Awards in London, right? Yeah. So
that's right. I got in yesterday. I started judging the World Cheese Awards in 2009. I was first invited by them to judge their competition in the Canary Islands, and I had been a judge before in Mexico in the regional competition in Chiapas. So I started in Mexico as a judge, and then I got invited by the Brits to go and judge the World Awards.
It's pretty awesome. How many cheese competitions are there out there, David?
Boy, I don't know. I was looking online today to see how many. I mean, I found like 15 right away.
That's
crazy. How many? Carlos may know more on the international scene. How many are out there? There are, of course, the certain national U.S. cheese championships here, the ACS as well. There are regional contests, the Big E in New England as well.
So, I haven't been to the Big E in years.
Yeah. So there are a number of competitions out there.
Carlos, how many overseas or how many international competitions that you know of?
Well, truly international, there's probably three that go on around the world. So there's the World Cheese Awards, and then there's the International Cheese Awards that also happen in England, and then there's the Global Cheese Awards that actually happen in Wisconsin, and that one is 1 year on and the other one off, and is organized in Wisconsin. Then every country has its own national ones. Spain has a very important one. France has a very important one. Switzerland, of course, and then some places have their not only their national competitions but also their local regional ones, and so. I would say that there's a very large number of these competitions, and it ranks in a matter of importance. The World Cheese Awards, not because I judge in them, but I think it's one of the most important ones, just in the number of cheeses that are entered and the number of judges that are from around the world. And so it really is the most international one with people coming from all over the world, but also cheeses from all over the world.
How many cheeses are entered into the World Cheese Awards?
So this year we have over 2,700 entries from 30 countries.
Now the other awards, cheese awards that you were talking about, do the winners of those get to enter their cheeses into that? Is that how that works? Or do all those competitions kind of work independently of one another?
I think for the most part they all work independently. Now at the World Cheese Awards, we have an award that goes for a cheese that already won in another award, which is a funny award to get.
What's
that? It shows how they're self-referential.
Right. I get it. David, you're the ACS man. What was the winner? I was reading up on the World Cheese Awards. So a Gruyere won, Carlos, this year, right? A Gruyere from Switzerland. Why was that the best cheese? If you could tell me, did you vote for that cheese?
I did vote, and I give it a 4 out of 5. So it was just a very, those cheeses that that sort of tells you a story, and so this cheese really spoke to me about like where it is made, how happy those cows are. It speaks of the Alpage and just a really good unique flavor that I just recognized right away as a Gruyere and also as an Alpine cheese. And out of the 16 that were in competition to win the World Cheese Awards, it was just very good. Funny thing is that the Gruyere only won by 1 point from the second place. So the second place, which actually ended up in a tie this year with two cheeses in the same spot, were also amazing cheeses. So when we're talking about these 16 cheeses that are at the last stage, we're talking about 16 amazing cheeses that are representing good, sort of the perfection in their style.
Yeah, and that's why you're able to judge them in that way. The only time I was ever an international judge, I was in Italy in 2001, and it was their first in Raw Milk Cheese Awards. And to get to the last stage, there was this massive amount of criteria to get to the last stage. You know what I mean? And it was their first one, and there was a lot of arguing. But then we got to the last stage, and there was no criteria except for what we decided was best,
Yeah.
And it gets touchy to decide what really is the best after you get through those categories.
And was that a consensus of opinion experience, or did you all decide individually?
No, it was a consensus. Yeah. It was a lot of yelling. More than I thought humanly possible about cheese. And that was a long time ago for me.
We're very quiet at the ACS. The judging is very quiet experience.
Yeah, the ACS,
there.
I always think, I volunteered last year, and I was amazed how civilized the Americans are.
Oh, you're so kind.
That's the
thing. We don't have that reputation everywhere, so I appreciate that.
No, and I judged this year as well.
Yeah,
and it was,
right.
It was in Definitely, I agree with that. It was a very
A quiet, private experience, even though there's many people involved, is very important. The whole feel of the entire judging, the main judging itself, and then the best of show, which is kind of what you had described well, is also it's really a popularity contest for the judges themselves at that point. But there's still the same rules apply. Nobody confers with anybody. Everybody just decides on their own what they think is the best cheese, and it's all numbers. For us, the cheese, I assume it works out the same way in almost all judgings and competitions. We don't think of it at the ACS as a competition. Really, the competition is a byproduct of the judging, and that we're in the business of evaluating cheeses and scoring cheeses, and by nature of the scores, that's who wins the awards.
Yeah, I always think of it, and whenever I judge it, it's like playing golf. You're playing against the course. You know,
right. That's right.
The players aren't playing against one another.
Right. No judges. The judges don't ever decide which cheese is better than another cheese. You're simply scoring the cheese, evaluating the cheese.
So, David, maybe you could tell us how is the cheese divided into categories at the ACS, and like how has that changed over the years?
Well, I was looking at the numbers today. The first judging, which is was in 1985. There were 89 cheeses in competition and 7 categories.
I think I judged 89 myself in like a 4-hour period this year.
Right now, we have 20 categories that results in 105 subcategories. And I think that what has happened has that the ACS judging mirrors the course of American cheesemaking with more variety and many more cheeses within categories themselves. And so categories are born out of what the cheesemakers begin to send us.
Do you ever cap that? Do you ever say that I know that you want to encourage people to make cheese well, and you want them to enter into the show just so they can get the feedback. That's what struck me about judging this was the most important was the forms we filled out to give back to the cheesemakers so that they knew. But are you ever going to cap it out?
There's not technically. There's no reason to cap it out. Everything fits. You know, at this point, we're not adding categories all that often anymore. In fact, we actually cut back. Sometimes we'll think a category is emerging in some way, or we'll get a large number of entries in a particular category that requires the creation of another subcategory, let's say, and then otherwise the reverse may happen, where all of a sudden we don't have so many entries in a particular subcategory we may collapse that into. But it seems to have leveled off.
It's very amoeba-like.
Very organic. It's a very organic process. And we examine it every year. Every year we look at the entries that came in. We look at where they ended up. We look at if we need to make a change. We have some adjustments we're making this year in one category.
I had gone in 2001, and then I came back 14 years later this year. And it was a different world. It was really impressive.
Very nice. Thanks.
So, Carlos, I was wondering if you could give us a quick take on what your experience was like at the World Cheese Awards and how many countries were represented this year?
I think there were 30 countries that entered cheese. And you have cheeses from almost every single continent. Of course, Europe and North America are overrepresented, but you know there's cheeses from Africa and there's cheeses from Asia. So there's a bit of everything.
What are the categories?
Again, like the American Cheese Awards, there's categories. They're ever evolving categories. So there are categories for the style. There's categories for type of cheese. For type of milk. And then there's because the core of the awards is a British award. There's also something that will resemble in the United States the American originals that in England is called the British territorials, and so those cheeses get a special award, and then some other cheeses that have PDOs also have specific awards, which are it also speaks about the difference between the two competitions. You're not for some awards only cheeses that are made within the denomination of origin end up being part of a category, whereas that doesn't exist in the competition in the U.S.
Do the consortium people show up? I mean, are they there, like influencing you and stuff?
they're there. I mean, a lot of people are there because the Cheese Awards is part of a larger event that is a trade show, as and they're around. They don't name themselves. I mean, this is a funny thing to say because you know, I don't even know them.
Right.
I know they're there.
They're watching.
I see them at the dinner afterwards, but I don't know who they are that year.
They're like, thanks, Carlos. So, we really needed that one. Now, I know that they're out there. How did the U.S. do this year?
They did very well. Carbison from Jasper Farms was in the top 16.
That's awesome.
So that's a very good entry this
that's
year.
Great.
What was the feedback that Harbison got amongst the judges? That I mean, I know that you've had it many times, but there's got to be some people out there. I mean, I'm sure there was that haven't sampled it. What did they think of the Harbison? What were the keynotes?
So, and this is what is fun about it, is that when the cheese is presented to us, we don't know what it is. You have the cheese, and because no one knows Harbison, probably in the judging table, at the last judging table, I was probably the only one that knew Harbison. And when the judges tasted it, you know, always the comments is like, is this French or is it not French, right? That's the first thing. And so the paramount is to be French, right? And so when someone says like, oh yeah, this is very good, it's probably for France, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But people also describe it as silky and you know, creamy and herbaceous and full of flavor, you know, all good things to say. And it was really an amazing cheese. And it's interesting because, you know, Harbison is a cheese that can be damaged in trouble
if
not well taken care of. But you know, they did very good work in getting it there at the top shape, and it was really fantastic.
Great to hear that.
Did you have, I mean, we had Harbison this year, and it fared well for us, too. I mean, it was like killer, obviously.
Yeah, I guess it does. The judging also, it's a good point that Carlos brings up, is that the judging at the ACS is also anonymous. People don't know. The cheeses are not identified. Periodically, invariably, people who are cheese professionals might recognize something that is recognizable. But, you know, by and large, we have a modest 1,800 or so entries rather than the 2,700 that Carlos was looking at last week. But again, the judges know what category they're looking at. And our judging operates a little bit differently than most judgings also. And Carlos can maybe bear me out on this, but I think most judgings are largely technical judgings, and that the methodology is to start with 100 points and tick your way down by finding flaws, defects, things you don't like about the cheese or going wrong or whatever. And right at the beginning, in the early stages of the judging, the ACS judging saw that there was an aesthetic side to cheese making, where there was not enough recognition being given to the to a balance of an outstanding quality in a cheese, and that perhaps an outstanding quality in a cheese may outweigh a defect, you know, but there was no equality. So the ACS judging is made up of a team of judges. An aesthetic judge and a technical judge, and they perform the same kind of job. So a technical judge will start from 50 points and tick their way down, and the aesthetic judge works their way up to 50 points, starting with some minimum scores, their combined score is the evaluation of the cheese.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I was an aesthetic judge, and I liked working with a technical guy because I thought that was a good way to do it. How do they do it in the World Cheese Awards, Carlos? Are you doing both sides like that, or you got a judging partner?
We have teams of between four and five judges, we do it exactly as David just explained. We start at 20 points, which is the highest mark that you can get, and then you start deducting for technical flaws, for issues with appearance and all these things. So it ends up being more technical. And, of course, the judges that are not cheesemakers themselves, but they, you know, they're cheesemongers or they work in another part of the industry, sometimes have a hard time pinpointing some of those defects. But I think that what is useful is that because you have a sort of a larger team, which is four or five, depending on your table, you always end up with someone that is more experiencing one thing and someone that is experiencing less thing. Also, because we have so many entries from around the world for cheeses that many of us have never seen or have never heard about, it's good to have that diversity of judges in one panel because it allows us to not, mark something bad for a cheese that we don't necessarily know or we don't necessarily understand. That, of course, is now changing because the more, increasingly more judges are people that know much more about the world of cheese and cheeses that from everywhere. And really, the national judges are starting to disappear. You know, people that are just experts on one single cheese. Now people really know more about a couple of styles and a couple of cheeses from different regions. So I think that's why the diversity in the World Cheese Awards is important. Not only to have Europeans judging, you know, cheeses that aren't there from everywhere in the world, but to have people from all over the world judging cheeses from all over the world is kind of more fair.
Yeah, I definitely, I noticed my ability was to recognize some of the cheese, you know, mm-hmm. just because I've seen it and I've broken them down. And
yeah.
The gentleman that I was with, you know, and I was like muttering to myself, like, I know what this is, yeah. you know what I mean? And not in a bad way, but I just right. knew. And he's like, oh, you know, and it's funny because when you have the knowledge, you can say, yeah. well, the rind doesn't usually look like this,
right.
or, you know, this is a little compromised in the texture. It's usually – the paste is a little pale yeah. in comparison to how I usually see it.
Right.
And then he could see, you know, that my partner was like, well, that's this, and he would explain to me.
It's like I always felt that about working with technical judges, was like a free college course.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that you found out things that you never even thought about, and it's always been a wonderful experience.
It's great.
Yeah.
Well, this is all good stuff. We're going to have to take a little bit of a break now, and then we're going to come back and pick these guys' brains a little bit more about cheese judging. Thanks a lot.
Hello, I'm Alice Marcus Creek.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
And we're the ladies of
We Dig Plants.
And today we're asking you to dig deep into your pockets and help us grow this radio station and our podcast and everything that you know and love about us.
How do you do it? You go to the heritageradionetwork.org website. You will see a beating heart. It's on every page. And you can give $1, you can give $5, you can give whatever.
$500.
$500, $5,000. Just click on the heart, donate, and help support the radio that you love.
The Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on heritageradionetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
We are back. We're like double back. You might be wondering what's going on. This is Erin Fairbanks. I'm the executive director of the Heritage Radio Network, or as we like to say on this show, the head cheese.
Yes.
And I am coming at you because as we head into December, you know, we all have a lot on our minds and hopefully a lot of cheese on our plates. And I want to give a shout out to the folks at Emily and Greg for doing an amazing job on Cutting the Curd every week. Thank you, guys. You're amazing. Discussing really important issues in the farmstead cheese movement and the cheese world more broadly. Totally critical. It's such a wonderful resource for us to have and one that you listeners should show a little love for. I wanted to share with you that we are in the process of working to raise $100,000 to support our programming, to support the over 35 weekly shows we do on Heritage Radio Network. And if you love Cutting the Curd, if you love knowing that there's a resource out there for cheesemakers to have a voice, for cheesemongers to have a space to talk their craft, and we know cheesemongers love to talk, show that support. Throw a few cheesy bucks our way. You can visit us at www.heritageradionetwork.org. Click that beating heart. And when you fill out your donation form, you can actually click the link to share that Cutting the Curd sent you. And I know that Greg and Emily would be very pleased to hear from you.
Yes, we would. We've already taken David's wallet, and he's not allowed to leave the studio.
Wait, whoops.
But I will get out of your way to make room for more of this really interesting discussion. I've already learned so much. But thanks for letting me sneak here in between courses.
Thanks, Aaron.
Yay!
Cutting the Curd is filmed in front of a live studio audience. So welcome back, folks. Thanks for Aaron for that. We need to get out there, donate to us. Come on. So we're going to be talking a little bit more. We got a little bit more time here to talk with David and Carlos. And I wanted to jump right back into this. And I wanted to throw the first question out to you, Carlos, and ask what do you think the impact of getting an award is on the cheesemaker? You know, does it help them sell the cheese? Does it help promote better cheese in general? I mean, does it mean anything at all? You know, what does it do for the guy that wins or the gal that wins?
I mean, it's huge. 2 years ago, a Manchego won, and it was a Manchego made in a very small production facility in Spain. And I met the cheesemaker a year later, and she told me that an hour after she was named the winner, she had sold her entire lot for the next 2 years.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's what it means. It actually means a lot for small cheese producers, even for big cheese producers, meaning something. And, you know, even if you don't get the top cheese in the competition, the smaller awards also mean something. And increasingly, I think people that go and buy cheese, they see the logos of the awards, the medals, and people trust them and they start buying those cheese as well. So it actually impacts sales.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think in addition to that, you know, winning an award is a real...
It's pretty cool.
It's very cool. It's a real affirmation of the work you're doing. You know, most people, by and large, who enter competitions like this don't win anything at all. And what they get, at least from the ACS competition, you know, they get their score sheets back, which are very detailed and have personal commentary from the judges. And so that is all that they'll get. But they get feedback on how they might make an improvement or change in their cheeses. But what Carl said, it's a tremendous opportunity for the cheesemaker themselves to promote the cheese in a much stronger way.
I mean,
yeah, and I agree that you know, the ACS competition is great for that. I think that the work that David and the rest of the group does there, not only are judging those cheeses that are entering competition, but then all that feedback that cheesemakers get is invaluable, and I think is great. And I'm very happy that the ACS has done that for so long, because I think it has positively impacted the world of cheese in America and cheesemaking in America.
Do the internationals get their score sheet back too?
They do. It's just because how the ACS competition is created between the technical and the aesthetic, I think some of the feedback is more useful for cheesemakers that are starting. Whereas if you're a more established cheesemaker and you already can pay for your own advising and someone to come and troubleshoot some of the problems that you may have, you know, the information that you're getting is probably one that you already knew. So it definitely is a difference. But yes, people also get their sheet, their contest sheets with information.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I mean, it's workshopping. That's what the best thing is. I remember when I was in college, I loved the workshop. I mean, I even if when I turned in writing and when I got it back from my peers and I was like, oh, that guy tore me apart. I hate him. But it was just the best because that's what helped me get better, right. You know, at my
I guess
craft.
That's the beauty of the ACS judging is that only one judge is really allowed to tear you apart and the other judge has to build you up. That's
yeah.
your job.
Yeah. I was the aesthetic judge. I was there to be nice. Yeah. It was a good
and
time.
You were very nice.
Hard to believe it, folks.
Hey, I'm a nice guy. David, maybe you can give us a funny story about judging cheese.
I could. I'll try and make it quick. This was in San Francisco. I was the last time that I had worked as a judge, and I got a dream category for me, which was butter. I love butter. I grew up in a margarine house.
Butter's good.
I love butter. So at that time, there were not that many. It was a smaller category. All the categories were smaller. There had about maybe 20 entries in the entire category, and they weren't subdivided, so you had all the butters together. My technical partner, Bernie Horton from Cornell, gave two entries. We had a tie for first place, and you have to break a tie for first place because they have to go into a best of show competition. So the judges have to break their own ties. So Bernie had given a perfect score to two butters, and we were tied. And he refused, rightly so, this actually became policy, to deduct anything. So I called this perfect, and it's perfect, the end. So I had to add like a half a point to one butter or the other, and I really was torn. And I'm a sweet butter person, but one butter was just really lightly salted in this way that was just right, you know, just right on tongue. So I gave that one the extra half point. And they both turned out to be the same butter. they were the same butter, just one lightly salted. And so it was a real vindication of the whole process to me because, again,
That's
we didn't
awesome.
Know what we were tasting. So it was perfect.
Carlos, what's your most memorable moment as a cheese judge?
I it's a very similar than David. So 2 years ago, we were judging and the blue cheese came up, and it was just a fantastic cheese. It had one of the best rinds that I have ever had. It was perfectly developed. And, you know, those rinds that you know that the cheesemaker is paying a lot of attention to his cheese or her cheese. And it was such a perfect cheese. And, you know, so I went and gave it a 5. And then, you know, we have a couple of other cheeses. And then the second blue cheese came around, and it was also impeccable cheese, and it was just such a good expression of milk and flavor and perfect bluing, and it was just out of this world. And so I went and gave it a 5, thinking, like, you know, what a strange thing to award two blue cheeses a 5. Not that I won't do it for any other category, but it just felt very weird. And then when the results were announced, it was the best in show. It was a blue cheese from Germany. And the second place, it was the same cheese, but entered into a different category. And so it vindicates the process that you were involved with because, you know, this came through different tables. It came through different judges. And it ends up being, you know, they end up with 1 point apart. And so it shows at least as a judge, you want to know that there's some certainty in the things that I'm doing. And I think these are the perfect examples of showing that there's some certainty that
That's so interesting.
A good cheese always will race to the top.
ACS, you can't just a note there. You can't enter your cheese
can't
more than
double
once.
Dip.
Can't enter in more than one category. But that's hilarious.
It's funny. I have one more question for you guys, and then I'm going to let you go. Like, so, and this is just something I was thinking of as we were talking, and it's always something I think of. So, you know, you think back to those earlier competitions, you know, in the 80s or even in 2000, early 2000, and Carlos, some of your earlier ones. And everything grows, and the amount of judges grow. So, I mean, are you finding that you sort of alluded to this, Carlos, before, but do you find that as the competition grows and more judges come out, are the judges getting better or are the judges getting a little less knowledgeable because there's more of them?
I think the number of people of high caliber are growing as well with the industry, and we have a certain number of repeat judges that come back. We like to have experienced judges come back, but we're always able to find new judges, and people are I would say the quality of the judging continues to be the same, and that the quality of cheeses over that same period of time has improved. People sometimes think that because you have more cheeses, more things coming in, that there's going to be more mediocrity. And in actuality, it's the opposite, that people know that they can't get any results by sending in something mediocre. So everything has stepped up, you know, in a way. So I don't believe we have experienced that with our judges. I think it's been quite the opposite.
What about you, Carlos?
Yeah, I'm in the same way with David. I think we are getting better judges. And I, you know, people have heard me say this before. When I was in 2009, our Supreme Panel was half British. And as I looked around, I was like, there is something really wrong about calling the World Cheese Award something that has so many people from some one place. And I think the World Cheese Awards were very open to listen to that criticism, and they have done a really strong work to try to find judges from other parts in the world, but also to have gender representation and race representation. Mm-hmm. And so it's not only that we're finding people that are terrific cheese people working in the industry, but also people from everywhere in the world. And I think that speaks volumes about how the industry has transformed and it continues to transform. And so I'm very happy always to see new people. And then when I get to judge with them, or I get to talk to them in the lunch or dinner or you know, in the hall, and learn everything that they have done and, you know, everything that I don't know, I think it's a fantastic experience. Being a judge is really a treat for someone, and to find those people that are so like-minded, yeah, like you, is terrific. So to have more diversity is good.
I agree. I got to say, being the judge of any food contest is just so cool. And I love that when you have judges that are – I like – you know, maybe we can get to another show something just about the process of picking judges, mm-hmm, and who's on a panel, because you have to have some people who are – they have a good palate, or their skill set. You have to have the control, because everybody has a bias. Everybody does. And when you have cheeses, all these cheeses laid out there, people are going to recognize them. And when they see them, when they taste them, all of the reasons why they do or don't like them, whether they have to do with how it tastes or what it is or otherwise, are going to be there. So I always enjoy judging anything with people who are lesser professionals, but with just as good a palate, if that makes sense.
It's a issue that people bring up all the time, is, you know, and it's the most important thing about any judging is the integrity of the judging, and that even in those situations, as you know, because you were just recently a judge, you know, we instruct our judges not to experience bias and not to express a personal preference. It's like me checking in a cheese at the counter that I don't really like. I know, you know, there's certain famous cheeses that I don't really like, and I'm not going to say what they are, but I still know when they're good, and I still know, you know, I still know if it's in good condition or not. So it's the same thing here. If you have a cheese you like, that can't enter into your thought processes while you're evaluating.
And it's hard.
It's hard to do. But I think, you know, based the same as Carlos is saying, I think that's how the judges perform.
The most intense food judging experience I ever had is I judged a chili contest at a bar that all the entries were made by the brewers, okay? And so we had a very clear winner, and I was threatened by at least three brewers after that contest, you know what I mean? I was like, this is some serious stuff here, man, you know? People take pride in that. I was like, we had to keep us in a separate room or something like that, you know?
A number of years ago, I was involved in a mustard tasting contest. There was like 150 entries in the thing. I just got the taste out of my mouth last week from that.
Note to self, do not taste massive amounts of mustard. So I want to really thank Carlos and David for coming on today. Just to recap, check out the petition online, please. It's very important. We need to sell raw milk cheese forever and ever and ever. And you know, I hope you guys enjoyed the show. I really enjoyed having you guys on. So thanks a lot, guys, and stay tuned for more episodes of Cutting the Curd. Have a good one.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.